the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome back to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast here on the CVP Media Network. My name is Joey, back from parts unknown, actually Jamaica. So Len is in the other panel here. Before we start, Len, I want to thank you for the good work you did while I was away. We had three great guest appearances. One was from our buddy SB over at the Woke Antidote podcast, which everyone should be listening to.
Yeah,
it was a good it was a really good episode. I mean, SB, if you know SB from our show or from his show or from his Twitter, you know this guy's bright, okay?
Just tee it up. All you got to do is just give him softballs, and he just smacks him out of the park.
Exactly.
It's so simple.
He's got a terminal. He's got a quite a background in tech and finance, or in finance, I should say. So we're happy that he came on. Happy that he's a pal of ours. So thanks, SB. Mark Jeftovic, the bomb thrower, co-hosted with you last week, Monday night. Excellent episode. Mark is a guy who understands the Bitcoin sort of ethos from a different perspective than a lot of us. A lot of us are, you know, sort of number go up as the way in, and then after that we start talking about hard money and things like that. Mark, through easy DNS lens and sort of his sovereign individual lens, has a different view on things, or a different perspective. Outstanding show if you haven't listened to that. And of course you can catch Mark on Twitter at Stump Pope and read his blog over at The Bomb Thrower. Len and I are on his paid letter as well, The Crypto Capitalist, which is now The Bitcoin Capitalist, but he assures me
it's rebranding. I think it's in the middle.
He's working on it. So we're happy to be a part of his universe, and that he's part of ours as well. So thanks, Mark, for that. And of course, we had the nuclear Bitcoiner Ryan McLeod on Wednesday.
Passionate about Bitcoin.
Holy man! Like, there's a lot going on in the energy space, and a lot going on in the fusion space as well now. As you probably know, over the last week or so, some major announcements from Corinne Jean-Pierre. Must have been a breath of fresh air for her to get up there and not talk about inflation and go tete-a-tete with PD for once. But anyway, Len, so thank you, buddy. I appreciate that. Made my vacation all the more relaxing knowing that I was in your capable hands over here.
And you joined in the chat a couple of times, which was, I was rather shocked. I thought you would have been enjoying it on the beaches over there rather than shitposting on Twitter and also jumping in on the chat. So that's why, I mean, you were my Bitcoiner of the week last week. That's essentially the reason why. So yeah, good for you. We should have got you the shirt, but I haven't got around to creating it and sending it off to the printer. Maybe next year, 2023, we'll get you the Bitcoiner of the week shirt printed and on your back wearing it. It would be very nice.
Looking forward to it, buddy. Looking forward to it. But I'm looking forward to be back. We got a lot to talk about tonight. That's all the housekeeping I have, Len. I don't know if you want to throw anything else in there. You usually get the Fountain 2.0 stuff to talk about, so it's all yours, man.
It's always Fountain. And if you are not listening to us on Fountain, what the heck are you doing? And it's not just us. Listen to everybody on Fountain and all your podcasts, because as you do so, you're going to be receiving Satoshis, the hardest asset known to man. And, well, humankind, I guess we'll call it, just to keep not get kicked off YouTube. But with that, listen to Fountain. Listen to us on Fountain. It's absolutely fantastic. And we got a few boosts. And I just want to read these comments. Number one, Norman Remnant replied or sent a boost to us. And he says, Len and the bomb thrower killing it when Joey shitposting from Jamaica. Love it. And Mo BTC Dick, you guys know hump day means 100 sats. Let's get it. And Joey underscore ZZE. Love the show. You guys got my energy focused entirely on Bitcoin and not crypto and trading. He bought in 2017, orange pilled in 2021. And he says, I hope 9 months after this Jamaica trip that there's another mini Joey Bitcoiner brought into this world. We need more of those. Haha, keep it up, guys. So yeah, that's it. Thanks for these comments. Keep dumping them in. If they're good enough for me to read, I'll be doing so, and you'll get them at the front of the show. So thank you very much for everybody who sent in boosts and the sats and these great comments. Thanks. Absolutely great stuff. So that's it for my housekeeping.
Let's get into it then. The price of Bitcoin here in American dollars, I have it at a whopping $16,437. Okay. Would not be surprised if the first two numbers in that price were 15 tomorrow morning. What about you?
I got $22,431 in Canadian dollars. Wasn't too long ago we were sitting around $18,000. What the heck happened in just a very short period of time? Was that while you were in Jamaica? We were 18K. I can't remember.
That's a good question. I honestly don't know. It doesn't feel like we dropped that much when I was away, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
I don't know what's going on, but you know what? I do know what's going on in the world of digital assets. And number one, Binance is on my radar. And in fact, there's some good news that came out of the Binance US camp. They have agreed to scoop up Voyager's assets, and that's totaling $1.02 billion. Does this now mean the fact that Binance US, at least their US wing, is scooping up assets? Is Binance in a good position? We'll see. Because there's been a lot of talk about Binance being on the ropes after everything which has transpired in 2022. And a lot of unstable money was wiped off the books from people. And this includes leveraged debt. And is this all this stuff about Binance, is this FUD? Or is there truth to the rumors that they may potentially be insolvent? Well, first off, I just want to point out a few red flags that, well, we talked about in the previous episode. And Binance offers, quote, crypto loans, end quote, where you could borrow up to 5 times the amount of your collateral. And remember, this is as per Binance website. Unlike bank loans, you don't need good credit score to get a crypto loan. So they are pushing this even for people that don't have a good credit score. Obviously, big red flag. Binance loans would allow users to borrow up to 65% against their collateral value. And in 2022, it's hard for me to imagine how many users out there held on to their collateral given what has transpired, as a lot of these loans were likely lost. And it makes me wonder, is this going to negatively impact Binance in some way? Really, it's hard to know. We may never know because we're dealing with a closed book office over here. And we could talk about that in more detail momentarily. But let's go over a couple of more red flags. Binance, they suffered from massive outflows this past week. In fact, one day it was $2 billion that left their exchange. And over the span of several days, it was seen to be $4 to $5 billion. In fact, I saw one number close to $6 billion. It's a lot of money leaving the exchange. And it makes me wonder, is this the new mechanism that's going to be used to funnel funds to a war-torn Eastern European country? Something has to fill the void left by FTX. And I wonder if Binance is going to be doing that. And I suspect one of the reasons for this massive outflow is probably because people are realizing that leaving shit on an exchange is, it's a recipe for disaster. And there's probably other reasons why that's making up this massive outflow. And that probably makes up the majority of the outflow. So users taking the shit off probably makes up a small amount. The remainder, well, it remains to be seen. Funny enough, there's even Justin Sun. We talked about him many times ago in the show. This is the dude behind Tron. Well, he decided during this whole issue this past week with Binance and BNB, the token going down in price, he decided to right the ship. And he did so by depositing $100 million into Binance as a way to calm the markets. Obviously, Buddy has a lot at stake to make such a bold move. But this deposit and the rationale to calm the market, to me, it's eerily similar to what happened in 1929. At that time, you had these prominent bankers. They got together and scooped up these blue chip stocks. And as the market was crashing, that was a symbolic move to try to calm the market. So we all know what happened in the end. But back to Sun in the Tron, his $100 million deposit into USDC. This was also at a time when the price of BNB was starting to plummet. And it was also a time, this particular moment in time, when Binance was also halting USDC withdrawals. You were able to deposit into it, but you're not able to take out of it. How nice of them. And CZ, he was on Twitter this past week on a Twitter space, and he was quoted, "Holding your own crypto in your wallet is not risk-free. I actually think more people lose money holding their own, lose more crypto when they're holding their own than on a centralized exchange." Give me a fucking break. Tell that to the people who use Celsius, Voyager, BlockFi, Quadriga, Bitstamp, Mt. Gox, and the list goes on and on and on. And the advice he's giving is disingenuous. There's absolutely no reason to believe that to be truthful. He's simply trying to improve his positions at the expense of the security of your funds. But the clown world impacts of Binance, well, it does impact it. And in fact, I got a funny story about it. There's a dormant shitcoin project called Mith, M-I-T-H. This was delisted recently by Binance. And the people behind Mith, they were asking for a deposit for which they placed on Binance to get it listed, get Mith listed. So they had to place a deposit of 200,000 BNB tokens. They did so 2 years ago. Well, now since Mith is being delisted from Binance, they want the deposit returned back to them. Really, what this shows off It shows the inner workings of Binance, and it illustrates that BNB is a pump and a dump scheme. Binance is listing tokens or coins, whatever the fuck you want to call it, not on the merits of the token, but rather if somebody comes up with the deposit required, or at least they did so in this case, and I'm not sure if they're still doing the practice. But it also shines a light into BNB by forcefully having people get into BNB, the token, and get their by doing so, get their shitcoin listed on Binance. So they have to buy that BNB, and it inflates the price of BNB. It creates an artificial demand for the product. And this is what you have to do this if you want to play by Binance's rules. Sounds to me like a lot of the petrodollar system, if you ask me, but that's a story for another time. And what's the likelihood of Binance going tits up? It's unknown. As I mentioned earlier, we're dealing with a closed book. But similar to FTX, until they were forced to open the books, we're talking about FTX, we were shocked with the outcome. So we'll see what happens. But there's some telling signs. For instance, Binance's auditor, they have deleted the term proof of reserve, their assessments from their website. They have also stopped working on other crypto clients globally that include Binance, Crypto.com, and KuCoin. And the company is Mazars. And so what does Mazars know that we don't? Without a report on Binance's liabilities, we're just left to guess as to the strength of Binance's balance sheet. And as CZ was stating on Twitter with respect to providing a report on the liabilities, quote, "We don't owe any loans to anybody. You could ask around," end quote. So we're left to do the hard work about finding out their liabilities. It's absolutely atrocious. And we could do the back of the napkin math, as you like to call it, Joey. BUSD, that's Binance stablecoin, has a market cap of $18 billion. This is a fiat-backed stablecoin issued by Binance and Paxos. Each BUSD token is backed one-to-one with US dollar held in reserve. Are they sitting on $18 billion of cash? They should be if this is backed up one-to-one. Or do you think that the cash they have is being repurposed? Because it is troubling times and they might be experiencing it right now, and the money might be used to keeping Binance afloat. Doesn't this all sound eerily similar to FTX? Because think about it. They also rely on a shitcoin, FTT for FTX, and BNB for Binance. Both are, quote, utility tokens, end quote. And they've been both pushed by the exchanges. So comparing the two really makes sense. And will the same thing happen this time around with what happened to FTX? Really, I don't know. But if they do survive this round, think about this. This is this round of the bear market. I'm not sure if they're going to survive the next one. Because the shitcoin market, to me, it kind of mimics the economy in which it goes through periods of expansion and contraction. And every time they go through the cycle, the highers get high and the lowers, they get lower compared to the highs. And the same thing is going to happen with the shitcoin market. And I wonder if this happens, will Binance be able to remain solvent as we go through these cycles over and over again? And just a reminder, if you do have anything on Binance or any other exchange, consider taking your Bitcoin into cold storage.
Got it.
But sadly, people, they still won't listen. And from what I understand, people are still trying to take advantage of this situation. They're trying to short BNB. To me, that makes sense. But they're doing so on Binance. So what happens if Binance closes shop? They take everything, including your shorted position, and they take it with them. I just want to end it on this whole topic here. And it's going to be very, very, very brief. It's indirectly related. There's still a lot of talk about USDT, Tether. And we're talking about that being wholly funded. And I've talked about my thoughts. I give my thoughts about USDT and USDC in the past. I'm not going to rehash this. But if anything happens to those things, Binance has zero chance to remain afloat. And that's going to be the one for sure. That's going to be the torpedo that sinks that ship. Binance, I think it's fucked. I have no proof of that. I can't say definitively they're going down, but there is smoke. There may be fire.
I don't have a ton to say about this, but I think there's a couple things we could talk about that, honestly, Len, we could do a separate hour on Binance and the bookkeeping at Binance, maybe one day over Christmas when invariably we won't be able to find a guest because they'll be hungover or too full to come on the show. So maybe we'll talk about it on a nooner. But I have a lot of tweets saved that I really want to go through and have a look at with a lot of charts, a lot of stuff about how much Bitcoin Binance is holding publicly, a lot of stuff about how much they're holding in wallets that people think are related to the Binance exchange, that may be client funds, may not be client funds. and whether or not those wallets are quote unquote cold or quote unquote awake. And, you know, all that stuff is floating out there. I recommend people look into it. And like I said, if we have time and if the opportunity presents itself, we'll do a dive into that. Maybe we'll do it live on the air. We'll pull some graphics and stuff. Cause there are some stuff out there. There is some stuff out there. To that end though, I'll just mention too, that the Bitcoin is bad crowd, the Bitcoin is a scam or a Ponzi crowd, guys like Mark Cohodes, who I think are, you know, I think he's a very competent short seller. The guy is a short seller of incredible, incredible reputation going back, you know, at least a few decades. These guys are really sort of circling, right? They smell blood in the water for Bitcoin, the crypto ecosystem, and the clout and financial gain that comes with being able to call, or better yet, expose an exchange or a token like this, especially after the way the public sort of clamored for SBF's head when he was found to be a fraud. These gains are immeasurable in a way that they have never been in the past. You know, we talk about the Ponzi schemes and Madoff in the you know, sort of recent history of investing. I would venture to guess that no one in the audience knows who busted up the Bernie Madoff scam. You know, who was the head honcho? No one does. I mean, I don't know either, but the point is that everyone knows who Alder Lane Eggs is now, Mark Cohodes on Twitter. Everyone knows who Doomberg is. Everyone knows who Mike Green, Eric Townsend, the guys who think Bitcoin and Tether more specifically and some of these exchange tokens are just, you know, ticking time bombs. Now, they may or may not be ticking time bombs. I don't personally think that it affects my view on Bitcoin. Will it affect the price? Yeah. Is it going to make my Christmas time meal conversations a bit more unpleasant? Probably. But, you know, ultimately the value prop for Bitcoin continues to get stronger every day. This sovereign individual and the rise of sovereign currency and sovereign monetary tools, be them related to privacy or be them related to cross-border transmission or be them related to you know, any number of other applications that USD doesn't serve. These things are not going away. In fact, like I said, the case for these tools is getting stronger by the minute. We're seeing in Europe, for example, which you will probably cover in Clown World at some point in Clown World News, this idea that you have to pay for your carbon emissions coming down the pipe. I don't know if you heard Peter McCormick's podcast released today about the sort of spiraling collapse of first world economies related to debt, entitlements, and demographics, all of which we have talked about on this show for the better part of 2 years now as sort of an irreversible spiral. Great commentary. And Peter, under the radar, kind of without thinking about it, said that either Visa or MasterCard reached out to him to sponsor the program. And part of the ad read was CBDCs on the card. So this stuff is coming, man. And if you think that you want to live in a system that, you know, that sees inflation so high that you need the support and you sort of have to bend the knee to CBDCs and surveillance tokens, go for it. No one's stopping you. I personally will get as many shots on goal as I can to something that's going to get me out of that, be it precious metals, be it, you know, moonshots on Apple stock, be it real estate, or be it Bitcoin. And on this show, we find value in things that are outside of the government system, outside of the sort of institutional incompetence on display at all levels of state action. The idea that you want to have something that's stuck inside those things is akin to, like you said, Len, having BNB shorted on Binance, you know, or BUSD shorted on Binance. You can't win in that system if the thing goes belly up. It's not going to be pretty. It's not going to matter how good your shorts are. Just ask the guys in the nickel LME scandal from about 8 months ago. How'd that go? We know you're short. We know we owe you billions, but we can't do it. It'll blow up the whole system. So we're changing the rules on the fly.
It's rigged.
It's like we talked about before, George Carlin, right? Famous investor. It's a big club and you ain't in it. And this is the case in why we have Bitcoin as well. So, you know, as far as like Binance goes, the outflows in Bitcoin terms are significant. You're right. But there's a couple of charts floating out there that are publicly available. It really is like a drop in the bucket for their total holdings for Bitcoin. Still a good sign, though. I think, you know, Matt O'Dell and Marty Bett were talking about this on RHR either this week or last week, that even though this is a statistic that isn't really measurable, the number of people who are suddenly taking self-custody extremely seriously and the number of tokens, be they Bitcoin or other tokens, by the way, all of which are outflowing now into privately held wallets. It's incredible. This is at the core of the Bitcoin mission. This idea of self-custody and self-sovereignty. I don't need you, and you don't have to trust me either. We're going to verify this on a network that's protected by, you know, many hundreds of thousands of mining machines running all over the world in order to verify transactions every 10 minutes or so in perpetuity. Amen. This is what Bitcoin is for. You know, the Binance hot wallets as well. You mentioned this, Lan. Like how much of these tokens do they have circulating, right? There's 22 billion of this, 10 billion of that, these other kind of offshoot tokens. I saw a tweet yesterday that's in my list of saved tweets about Binance that says there are Binance BNB wallets that have, you know, between 200 million, you know, 200 million up in BNB token with no transaction history. So the tokens just kind of appear in those wallets. That is to say that you can't really trace the origin of the tokens. So how are we supposed to, or how is, you know, a competent accounting firm, for example, or a competent auditing firm supposed to verify this stuff if on the day of the audit, these wallets can be spun up with the tokens already in them? This is like unbelievable stuff. That interview that Binance did on, or the CZ did on CNBC last week, I'm sure you saw that with, I think it was
that lady.
I can't remember the blonde lady's name. She's very good.
She gave that face many times
because she knows. She just went through it with SBF and FTX. She's probably thinking that it's some kind of fever dream. It's so similar. Like, I can't believe this. Every question I ask him, he's giving the same answers as Bankman-Fried. Now, I think some of those questions were taken, or some of those answers were taken out of context to fit this narrative of Bitcoin is the only thing. You got to get your Bitcoin off exchanges. They're doing fractional reserve. Again, all that may be true. All those answers didn't necessarily point to that, but you know, the obfuscation and the lack of clarity in the response tells you, I think, something about what you need to know when it comes to Binance's priorities. They don't want to give you a clear answer, because if they do, it'll probably stoke a little bit of fear. And if it stokes fear, they're going to have a run. So, you know, it's something that's ongoing, and we're going to keep an eye on it. I'm sure people who listen to and watch this show are going to keep an eye on it. And again, like, there are good exchanges, bad exchanges. There are good actors, bad actors. You know, we've been sponsored by exchanges in Canada that will do custody. We've had guests on from exchanges that won't do custody. You know, we've had Bull Bitcoin people on. We've had, obviously, Adam O'Brien. We got Dave Bradley this week from Bitcoin Well as well on Wednesday night. There are a lot of people in the space who will help you either store your Bitcoin independently or will store it for you in a way that's secure on their platform. And in ShakePay's case, you know, they'll even encourage you to take it off and give you instructions on how to do that as well. There's many exchanges that will do that. You have to take this to heart, because if you don't, you're going to wind up like these people on Quadriga, right? I saw Megs tweeting a little while ago that some of those wallets are finally starting to wake up a little bit, that they're finally starting to get that stuff back. So, you know, it's been 5 years. You missed the biggest run-up in Bitcoin price history because Gerald Cotton faked his death in India, you know, got an upset stomach and was killed by a Pepto-Bismol overdose or whatever that story is. Like, this stuff is like, it's happened so many times that at this point, the willful ignorance of the average investor is inexcusable. And one of the things we're trying to do, Len, I think you'd agree with this, is take a stance on custody. You got to keep this stuff yourself, right? A hardware wallet costs, I don't know, like, what's a Ledger cost these days? Like $50, $60. And then you could do like a Blue wallet. I've you know, messed around with Sparrow wallet, Wasabi wallet. These all kinds of options for you. Some you'll like more, some you like less, some are more UI friendly, some are more technical, blah, 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 right? There's beginner level stuff, intermediate, expert level stuff, but the options are there. You just got to explore it. Anytime you think that you're not capable of doing this stuff, remember, man or woman, you were curious enough to go down this rabbit hole and buy some of this crazy thing 5 years ago, 3 years ago, a month ago. You definitely have the intellectual curiosity, the capacity to learn how to use these tools for your own privacy. And I promise you, once you learn to use them, you'll never go back. You'll never go back. That's the point of no return, is becoming sovereign. And I hope that all you take that to heart, man. It's an important thing, and it's becoming more important by the day, not just because of exchanges, but I'm sure we will get into this clown world Europe, clown world North stuff. Plenty of reasons being given to you by state actors to do this as well.
Yeah, I just want to talk about the self-custody. I think that a lot of people are less willing to do it because they still have a trust in the system because they're stuck in the fiat mentality where the bank holds the cards and they could leave their money in a bank, so to speak. And they know that it, in Canada, it's CDIC, and in the United States, it's FDIC insured. So you have that sort of protection alongside it, but you don't have that with Bitcoin. And if you leave it on an exchange and that exchange goes tits up, like we've seen so many others, you don't have any recourse. You just basically lost it all. So this whole let them hold it for me doesn't work. You have to hold it for yourself. So you have to go back, and it's got to be more of a I have to do it type of narrative versus anything else. It's not somebody else doing it for you. It's you have to do it yourself. And that's the way it's going to be moving forward for just about everything. You can see the world is changing. And yeah. People aren't going to be doing it for you. It's you got to fight for yourself. And
if you haven't read The Sovereign Individual yet, like you have to just skim it or listen to some podcasts about it. But like, I cannot tell you how much it will change your view on things. The way that these guys were talking about this, these developments 20 years ago, like they saw the writing on the wall. You know, the next rise is going to be citizens who can be without they are without jurisdiction, right? These people cannot be contained by a border. Their money cannot be contained by a border. Their skills cannot be contained by a border. And so what you wind up doing is having a bunch of people with the ability to escape an increasingly coercive tax collection regime. And that's what you're seeing. You're seeing this now. It's not really up for debate, I don't think. And it's not conspiratorial to say that the government is going to become more coercive in their tax response. What was the number of IRS agents that the Biden administration was planning to hire?
87,000 or something, 85,000.
The size of a small city. Like we said on the show, you think they're
bringing all armed, by the way?
Yeah, I know. Those videos are ridiculous. It looks like a Flashdance video, for fuck's sake. Anyway, so these people are not coming in to audit millionaires and billionaires. They don't bring in rookies to do that. And they're coming to get you, man. Okay, they're coming to get you and your $600 transaction or whatever the fuck.
Hey, did you see the number of transactions that are $599 spiked? There was a chart that was released. Of course. And surprisingly, there's a whole bunch of $599 transactions on Venmo.
That surprising? People who say stuff like the free market doesn't work, like that's a market mechanism. If you start making $600 transactions illegal, then people are going to do $5.99. So what are you going to do? You're going to go down to $1 eventually? Like, you can't.
A lot of 99-cent transactions.
Or if they start saying that they're going to start looking at $100 transactions, like that's everyone's grocery bill for a week now. What are you going to do? You can't. Like, the pressure is coming from both sides, right? The inflation is pushing all the transaction values up. The coercive regime is pressing all the surveillance thresholds down. And pretty soon, all my transactions, I'm not even going to be able to buy a cup of coffee. I'm not even going to be able to buy a K-cup pretty soon. I'll have to send a paperwork, you know, bucket to the CRA.
Just get some hot water from the tap and pour some freeze-dried crystals in it and stir it up.
That's bad for my ESG score. Then I'm not going to get my STEMI. I won't be able to charge my phone.
Then use cold water. It doesn't matter. Or use the water that comes from the sky. Anyways, let's keep this moving on because there's clown world financial news we want to talk about. And man, what a clown world it is. And the big story this past week that impacts us Bitcoiners is the introduction of a proposed new law called the Digital Assets Anti-Money Laundering Act. And this was proposed by our favorite Elizabeth Warren and Roger Marshall. Never talked about him on this show as of yet. And what is interesting about this, it's a bipartisan bill. And obviously, Madam Warren, Ms. Warren, she flies under the Democrat flag. And Mr. Marshall, he does so under the Republicans. So we got people from both sides of the aisle presenting or proposing this bill. And the meat of this bill is to curb money laundering, and it's also to curb terrorist activities and rogue nation financing through cryptocurrency. And I suppose with FTX gone, they decided it's now the best time to get out of this game because they cannot pull the strings of a certain vegan eating CEO. So it's time just to get out of this altogether. And the bill essentially would apply KYC rules to cryptocurrency participants such as wallet providers, miners, validators, and more. And effectively, this would make KYC free Bitcoin, it would be harder to obtain and use in the United States. And the wallet addresses that mingle with mixing services, they may potentially be flagged as well. So if this does pass, it would have a massive impact, obviously, to Bitcoin and users. But given who has introduced the bill, I suspect this one is not going to pass. And this is just based off this fact I read across Twitter. Senator Warren, she introduced 315 bills. You take a guess how many of those 315 bills became law, Joey.
I'm going to guess she's no Ichiro. I don't know. How many? How many did she hit?
One. One out of 300. That's about 1/3%. And the law that was passed, it was the National POW/MIA Flag Act. And I'm sure that was a very good, maybe, you know, mostly symbolic anything, but really it wasn't earth-shattering. Good on her for passing that bill, but still 314 swing and misses. That's not too good. And with respect to this proposal, though, even if it isn't passed, which I suspect it probably won't, it does open the doors for lawmakers to continue their attack on Bitcoin, and they could see what Bitcoin is, really the potential of it. And it's an attack on their ability to control the money and the supply, and along with it, a heck of a lot of power. So in fact, just today, we had the Senate banking chairman. He was saying that the SEC should ban crypto in the United States, citing national security threat. I'm unsure if Bitcoin is included in that list, but I would imagine it may be. And remember, when they're doing any of these actions, they're doing it under the guise of user protection. And they could use the FTX collapse as an example as to what happens when things are left unchecked. And perhaps this is an opportunity for our resident Bitcoin space cadet to continue his mission to bring Bitcoin knowledge to Washington. Or maybe Buddy is too busy blocking people on Twitter with opposing viewpoints. But I digress, because there's more clown world bullshit we want to talk about. And I just want to bring your attention to somebody by the name of Nina Turner, who is running for Congress in the state of Ohio. And why am I bringing up Ms. Turner? Well, doing a little bit of digging, you could find out that her campaign had a job opening, a full-time/part-time canvassing job. Nothing out of the ordinary, but the pay was interesting. She was hoping to pay somebody that filled this position $15 an hour. $15 an hour is rather interesting, because she, running for Congress, has been advocating for a minimum wage of $25 an hour. So in a nutshell, that pretty much talks about what the whole thing is. The whole world is wrong. You have people out there, they want other people to pay for everything. But when push comes to shove and it's time for them to pony up, money is tight and they're going to give you a lesser amount. That's the bullshit we're talking about. If you're going to talk the talk, fucking walk the walk. And if not, somebody's going to call you out for potentially being a hypocrite. And I don't want to enter into debate of how much minimum wage should be, because it varies across all jurisdictions. And I'm sure it's tough for people working those jobs to make ends meet, especially as right now we live in a very inflationary environment. But I do want to point out how pathetic it is to say one thing and to do the exact opposite. And since we're on the topic of pathetic, we could talk about something that is equally as pathetic, the CPI. And the number that came in this past week was 7.1, which was better than 7.3 from estimates. But the real talking point here is not the number 7.1 or 7.3. The number that I want to talk about is 60. That 60 seconds, this is what transpired 60 seconds before this information was fucking dropped. This is all speculation on my part. So it's a disclaimer, so fuck you if you want to nail me to the cross, because I'm just speculating here. The CPI data comes out 8:30 a.m. Eastern. I forget which day it came out this past week, Wednesday, Thursday, where the fuck it was. But 8:29.
Last Wednesday.
Last Wednesday. So last Wednesday.
Last Tuesday.
So 8:30 Tuesday a.m. Eastern. 8:29, it was noticed that stock market futures spiked more than 1%. It was almost as if like information was leaked, and certain traders were able to act on it. They noticed that trading in treasury futures surged as well. It was noted over the 60-second span before the CPI data was released. Over 13,000 March 10-year futures were traded. Normally at that time of day, 8:29 a.m. Eastern, activity as usual non-existent. But as Karine Jean-Pierre noted when she was questioned about the possibility of leak data, this was, quote, minor market movements, end quote. Give me a fucking break. This is the trading places level bullshit. And this is reference to the movie of Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy. It's a fantastic movie, but I don't want to go talk about that too much. To me, this is not some unexplained blip on the radar. It's like what a head of lettuce cost $10 now. This isn't the perception that reeks of insider information and people capitalizing on it. And all the while, people like us were fucking staring at each other like fucking cattle, mooing and waiting for the data to drop at 8:30 so we could act accordingly. It's this fiat level bullshit. It drives me fucking insane. Joey, I'm fucking tired of this, man. It's like we're playing flag football and we have fucking shoes with holes in it and a deflated ball. The fucking field is filled with mines. And all the while, these guys, they're getting fucking flavored water. It's a climate-controlled environment, and they're laughing at us because we're fighting for scraps. Fuck you, man. Fuck you and your privilege. Fuck you with your insider information. Check your financial advantage information and check that at the fucking door. I'm tired of this bullshit. Because you know what? When Bitcoin fucking wins, when Bitcoin is the unit, we're going to be settling everything. I'm going to be laughing our asses. At least I'm going to be laughing my ass. And I'm sure you too, Joey, because when these people, they will lose their fucking advantage. And this time, you see this. Leaked data. We also had the Twitter files. It's another thing. How could anyone look at what's going on here and say, oh, yeah, I believe these guys, they know what they're doing and they're going to fix the fucking problem. No, they fucking, anybody that's saying this, they're fucking high and huffing copium, and they get me fucking checked into a clinic. But you know what, Joey? Serenity now, because there's more clown level bullshit I want to talk about. And really, it's the last story I want to talk about. And fuck, Donald Trump. What a joke. You know where I'm going with this one. He dropped a bombshell this past week, and he announced that he's selling some limited edition, or he sold limited edition NFTs. Price, $99. And by purchasing one of these beauty NFTs, you enter to a sweepstake where you could win such prizes such as dinner with Donald Trump or maybe a round of golf with him. And to me, the latter would be awesome. I'd see him slice ball after hitting it off the tee. But remember not too long ago, Trump, what he said about Bitcoin, he says, I'm not a fan of Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies, which are not money. And he also said Bitcoin is a scam competing against the dollar. But he will embrace NFTs as why is a way to pad his pocketbook. For shame. And also for shame on the people that fucking bought into this. They bought this fucking shitty NFT. Forbes was reporting that the NFT collection sold out in 12 hours. 45,000 sales done. This netted $4.45 million. One dude was reported buying an NFT just for a joke. And he realized when he did so, it was sent to a wallet that he didn't have control over. He actually had to jump through hoops in order to get access to it. He eventually figured it out and eventually sold that NFT to a sucker. But I have to just point out the image of Trump on the NFTs. I'm not sure if you saw it, Joey, because it's fucking funny shit. Apparently, the images were stolen from stock photos, and people were finding they zoomed in. They found watermarks on the NFT photos, which they forgot to remove. What a fucking joke. This proves once and for all that you could actually right-click and sell that as an NFT. This is the fucking proof, but it's truly clown world. I'll leave it over to you. I'll throw you the baton. It's up to you to run with this one and take it the last mile.
I don't have much to add there, man. I think that was a great rant. I'm 100% in agreement with you on the insider trading that goes on around Fed Day. If you go back in every single Fed Day, every single CPI print, every single market moving announcement, meeting, note release, anything. You can go to Zero Hedge and he'll always have the tweet that says who leaked the minutes, who leaked the number, who leaked this, who leaked that. Because invariably a minute, 30 seconds, 45 seconds before the leak, there's a spike in futures, a spike in S&P minis, a spike in whatever, right? And all this stuff, this only happens, okay, when someone knows the data, period. End of story. And this idea that there's no insider trading, you know, cringe Jean-Pierre, like I don't want to pick on KJP because she's got an impossible job. I think she's, you know, almost unbelievably incompetent, but she's got a very difficult job all the same. Right. And, you know, someone should ask her, why is it so hard to believe that there's insider trading on the CPI number when every member of Congress and the Fed was insider trading 6 months ago, you know, and probably continues to, quite honestly. These guys, you know, put their money in trusts or have a manager, quote unquote manager. Imagine being Jerome Powell and having to have a manager do your investing. Like, I don't think so. Jerome Powell is telling that guy what to do and when to do it. This is like, it's Banana Republic level stuff. To your point about the Twitter files, I didn't know if we were going to talk about this tonight. And I just skimmed it. Well, I mean, we shouldn't skim it though, because like there's clear issues here with corruption in American three-letter agencies, and I would speculate that it probably stretches to other countries' three-letter agencies as well. And there's, you know, that story today that was released in the Twitter files about the FBI paying Twitter over about a three-year period, like close to $20 million or $30 million for information, cooperation, meetings, travel, things like that. related to what exactly? Mean tweets, jokes, the FBI asking for location data of Twitter users who they, you know, thought were posting concerning misinformation. This is like, again, gold machine gun index level stuff.
And some had very few followers. Some of the people they were looking
some
into.
Some of them had less than 1,000 followers, less than 500 followers.
So like, it seems like a targeted approach.
100%. And this idea that like these guys are anything but corrupt. I mean, how can you think that? How can you look at this and say that, you know, this is where the rot stops or that the rot's not that bad? I tweeted the other day, and I think this is true, that there's it's a very small circle of people basically talking to each other about how great they are and how upstanding they are, how ethical and moral they are, and how important they are to moving society forward. But the only people dumb enough to believe it are the people who are in that circle. No one else believes it anymore. The only issue is that that circle has a very difficult to upend model when it comes to the size of their loudspeaker and the size of their platform. You know, I don't know if you saw Adam Schiff today or yesterday on Morning Joe. It must have been today if it was Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski, who are married, by the way. The two of them are married. Though they hardly ever talk about that on the air. So you have to know that from a few years ago to know that they're, you know, like, you know, talk about keeping it in the family. Anyway, Adam Schiff talking about the nature of the January 6th riots and how the Americans were close to losing their democracy. I mean, I don't know. It's very strange to me, continues to be very strange to me that these guys talk about how close they were to losing this great democracy. Only one thing can be true, Len. Either the democracy is so great and a couple of guys dressed in, you know, stone cutters outfits or whatever the fuck those guys are wearing, you don't have to worry about it. Or the democracy is in a place where a couple of guys dressed in stone cutters outfits can upend it. And in that case, it's not that great and not worth saving anyway. It's this incredible thing. And you know, they finished the interview with Adam Schiff saying that, well, the new Republican majority is not going to want to look into this. They're going to care about nonsense like Hunter Biden's laptop and imagine censorship. And it gets this laugh from Mika and Joe. And honest to God, man, if you wanted to make a 20-second clip of why people hate the media, and I'm using the word hate on purpose. I know it's a strong word. You know, I could use distrust or are distasteful of the media or are skeptical of the media. I think people hate the media. I hate the media. And it's because of clips like that. Like, I care about that Biden laptop thing, not because I want to see pictures of this pervert with underage girls, you know, huffing crack, but more because there's an anchor there for a lot of the other problems that I think are going on in terms of mainstream reporting and government interference and three-letter crooked agencies that should be disbanded. And what their effect is on the things that I hear and see, what their effect is on the conversations that I have with my friends, what their effect is on me trying to convince otherwise smart people that there's something here that they should be looking at. It's very difficult when those things are going on. The same is true for Bitcoiners. We have these problems with things like CPI and with inflation data. CPI was down from expectations this month, but most of the cooling came from used cars. I don't know about you, but I don't buy a used car every week. I buy groceries every week. I pay for energy every week. I pay for, you know, transportation every week. But I don't buy a used car every week. I don't care what used cars sell for. I buy a used car once every 7, 8, 9 years. In your case, once every 20 years. This is not an inflation number that really matters to me. But this is what they say. And, you know, I think about the rumors now circulating about Powell's Brookings Institute speech, that there was an onshore fund or onshore investment house that was having trouble and needed him to be dovish for an afternoon to help them get their books back in order before they went tits up. I don't know if that's true, but it sure seems to me like that was like a fugue state for Powell. He hasn't been dovish since that meeting, and the markets are reacting. You know, I think they're down, what, 3% over the last three trading days? I'm like looking at like VFV, for example, which is usually not too bad. I think it's down 3% over the last three or four trading days. This is, to your point, these are symptoms of a very large problem that, in my view, is beyond solving. It's beyond solving. So what am I as the average person supposed to do? Well, me and you started a podcast. We talk about it. We have a fairly big audience. I think people appreciate that we do a little bit of research and try and share this stuff. Then I think the other thing to do for most people, if you don't want to start a podcast or don't want to talk to your friends, I know Boomer runs a runs a, you know, meetup in Ottawa, for example, as other meetups and things like that. Companies help with this too, of course. But the other thing people can do is just opt out, just buy Bitcoin. And, you know, I shared a tweet today that more and more people are living alone, for example, than ever before. More people living alone than have children in the United States for the first time in, you know, 100 years. These are not healthy things. All these things together lead you to this kind of cocktail, this chemical cocktail that is untested, untried. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that these things are there. It's impossible to sustain a society this way. Certainly not one full of people that are thriving, fulfilled, and willing to do their best work for, you know, queen and country, as the saying goes. You need these kinds of things. You need national pride. You need individual prosperity, because individual prosperity and the potential for prosperity drives growth, drives family starts, drives everything. But without those things, what do you really have? You're playing for a team you don't believe in, you know, to make a football analogy or a sports analogy, for a coach who doesn't really know what they're doing, and a general manager who will trade you, you know, or throw you in jail for an indeterminate amount of time without a trial, if you speak out against them. This is not good, man. And, you know, I think Bitcoin is proving to a lot of people to be a respite of sorts, not just for the financial freedom and potential for sovereignty, but also because it's a bit of a community, like-minded individuals, right? You and me, you know, when we were at work talking about Bitcoin years ago, the conversation started around number go up, but then you find pretty soon that you're talking to more and more people about privacy, about sovereignty, about individualism, about, you know, the problems that are broken, or the things that are broken in the society that we're living in. And how do we fix them? What do? Build strong communities, build strong families, right? Insulate yourself to these things as much as you can. Bitcoin is a mechanism for that. And the community that Bitcoin has provided for me, for sure, has been a mechanism for that as well. It's been a lot of fun in a world where things are truly burning, man, okay? Everything's burning except the tar sands, okay? So, you know, the thing we need to be burning is not burning, but everything else is burning. And in that world where everything is burning, the community that Bitcoin has provided for a lot of us has proven to be extremely valuable during COVID, during lockdowns, and now during what may be the beginnings of intentional and prolonged financial repression by first world governments. So I'm excited to see where this goes. I'm excited to be positioned the way I am. But I also think that there's value in being able to convince people that this is the way they should be thinking. And this stuff with media, three-letter agencies, the insider trading, it just makes it easier. It's frustrating, but long-term, I think it's going to make it easier for us.
The amount of information to talk about this on mainstream media it's virtually nil. It's really sad, and it shouldn't be the case. And I talked about it last week with Mark, and political heads should be rolling given what's been released. Any other time in history, we would be like, what the fuck? There's a problem here, and there should be some sort of change in the way things are done. But now, for whatever reason, maybe we're distracted, or maybe we just learned that we just are going to have subpar people in positions over there, and we just learned to accept it. We don't care. And nobody's talking about it. And it's really sad, because this is something that impacts us on a daily basis, because these are the people that control the money and can control the narrative. And that's a very powerful position to be in. And Bitcoin, buying into it, not really changes our focus, but it's almost like it reminds me a little bit of the counterculture revolution, the counterculture movement from the 60s and 70s. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, Joey.
I wasn't there.
I was at the very, very end of that, but that helped spur like companies like Apple, Atari, and stuff like that, where you just left the corporate environment of the East, where, you know, you buttoned up, work 9 to 5 and all that, and you go into an environment which is more friendly. So it's almost like that. You're shunning away the status quo and trying to build a new type of system. And that's almost the way Bitcoin reminds me of. It's almost like the countercultural movement back some 40, 50 years ago. And I'm not sure what's going to be the end result of it, but I just look at the beginning of it. It just seems like there's a lot of similarities. And you talked about living alone. I just wanted to touch base on that. There is a lot of people living alone, but remember, living alone now is not the same that it was 20 years ago, 30, 40, any other period of time. Not to say that I'm justifying it. It's just, if you were living alone at say 30, 40 years ago, you were very much isolated. I mean, you know, you could pick up a phone and call somebody, but now with everything in front of you, it just makes it easier to get in touch with somebody, but doesn't make it any better. You still have to have the human touch.
It's an imagined camaraderie though. Like it's like this, you know, it's like this, I you know, the words are escaping me. It's like this veil that makes you think you're part of something, but really, like, you know, you put the phone down. I remember, for example, okay, I'll give you a great example of this. Coming out of doing the Two Whites and a Blue podcast, and we were doing it on Zoom, and like me, Mike, and Will would have a couple of beers and have a great time. And, you know, you're doing that show for an hour and a half or 2 hours. You have two or three beers. You got a nice buzz going, especially if you're drinking something heavy. And then I would come out to the real world, whereas like my wife would be on the couch, like playing with my dog or something. And it's like a different place. Like this online thing, okay, is not real life. And it may seem like it's serving a purpose for you. And like I mentioned, the community aspect is important, but it can be a lullaby and stop you from going out and connecting in real life with people, really having those experiences that make you human. And it's so dangerous.
Yeah, you do have to have that human touch. It's definitely required, not just to satisfy certain components of your psyche and requirements and needs, but also to build on your social skills, which it's harder to build when you don't have that human interaction, this face-to-face conversation with one person or many other people. And without that building of that type of social skills, it's hard then to translate into successful life. I mean, look at SBF. I mean, he's kind of, we laugh at him now given what's transpired, but it's kind of sad in a way. You know, he built this cocoon and he lived in it, but now it's popped and he's got to live in this jail cell, and it's hard for him to adapt, as you could see. It's really sad. And so that, I just wanted to make a note on that about people living alone. It's a very much different period of time now, and also cost to come into play too. I don't know who could afford living alone, to be perfectly honest. It seems like you're just forced to commingle with other people just to keep rent down.
This is the other thing, right? Like we talk about, I mean, you and me don't talk about it, but you know, in the ether, there's discussions about stuff like, you know, industrial agriculture and pigs that are like living inside of four walls, barely big enough to house them. And they, you know, there's those heartbreaking videos of pigs who are like as smart as dogs, right? Like the same personalities as dogs, basically. Just in these four walls shaking back and forth, like they're having mental trauma. And people watch those videos and go, oh my God, I can't believe it. It's so cruel. And they watch the videos on Netflix in their 10 by 10 bedroom, you know, which is one room in their 30 by 30 apartment. Like you are the pig, man. You are the pig. You are the pig here. And what you got to ask yourself is, who's the farmer? It's not the left or the right who's the farmer, man. It's, you know, it's the government. I hate to say it, but like it's obvious, man. And you know, these problems have to be solved at the highest levels. They can't be solved at the DNC, okay, or the RNC or the Liberal Party caucus or the Conservative Party caucus. They have to be solved by the people in power. And if they don't want to solve them, you know, we're left with very little choices besides starting to think about how we can get out of it. What do we do? I don't want to move, but I can't watch my wealth be debased by new taxes every year. I can't pay $2 a liter for my gas after the carbon tax. I can't, you know.
Wait, how much is it right now? Because diesel's still over. It's $2.20 diesel.
It's a buck.
I know gas is like $1.35.
It's $1.40 for 87.
Diesel's almost 80 cents more. Nuts.
My car takes 91. It's not a new car. For people who are like, oh, Joey living high on the hog, it's an 07 Volvo. But it takes 91. That's how you get an 07 to get.
It's got a knock sensor. It will retard the timing, and you're okay with putting 87 in. Yeah. It just won't run as great, but you're saving yourself a little bit of money.
All that to say, right? It's not, again, like who's the farmer? And maybe the farmer is not the government. Maybe the right way to say it is the farmer is, you know, decades of policy that have kind of compounded on each other now. And it's hard to peel back that onion, man. We gotta find a way. And I know that there's discussion in Bitcoin circles about, well, we got to abolish the government, or like abolish the FBI, CIA, SEC, whatever. Like, I don't think we have to abolish them, but we have to reimagine the way they work, right? These things are post-World War II vintage at this point, and nothing else in society is. Nothing else in the world is that vintage anymore, including, by the way, international relations. So these things have to be reimagined. Otherwise, they will invariably fall by the wayside one way or the other. And you want that transition. We talked about this before. You want that transition to the next sort of stage of living to be as smooth as possible, because otherwise you get civil unrest, and civil unrest is not good for anyone. You can agree or disagree with BLM, but that's not good for anyone, including them, including me, including you. You can agree or disagree with January 6th, but that level of unrest is not good for anyone. You can agree or disagree with any number of things going on Elon Musk's Twitter, but that level of complaining, like when he sends out tweets, like the left and right are both mad, that's a good thing. It's not a good thing. Having that much unrest is not a good thing. It's a product of acting quickly, sometimes without thinking, trying to do too much at once. And I think more than people are willing to discuss, it's a problem with the ability of individuals to adapt and overcome. And all these things together, you know, they're not sustainable, man, period. They're just not. It's not. And I like you could throw financial issues and fiscal policy into that equation. But even if the financial policies and fiscal stuff was perfect, if all that other stuff still existed, you know, it's still not sustainable.
Easier to stomach, though. When you have everything broken, it's harder to.
100%. You're absolutely right.
It's just now everything seems to be broken. And as a result, everything is magnified. And it's very difficult to fix it because it's not just one singular problem. You got all these problems. And you just can't simply throw money in it, because that's been the tried, tested, and true method up until this point. That's where we got to this fucking mess.
Right. Right.
Let's transition to Clown World North. And there's always some more Clown World things to talk about. And it looks like there's going to be some public consultation into a potential Canadian CBDC. And this consultation will be taking place in 2023. And this is all according to Tiff Macklem. He's the Bank of Canada's governor general. So we talked about him. The governor. We talked about him at length. And yeah, a CBDC, you mentioned it a little bit earlier in the show. They're saying, at least for this case, it's going to be ultimately a decision that's going to be parliament's to make, and they want to make sure when it's ready, they're ready. And he says, quote, they're moving more from the R part in R&D to the D part in terms of the CBDC work. Imagine that. So we've been talking about this for a while. So the Bank of Canada staff, they have been co-researching CBDCs, not alone, but they've been doing so alongside officials from the U.S. Federal Reserve, the Bank of England, the Bank of Japan, the Bank of Sweden, the Swiss National Bank, and the Bank for International Settlements, and the ECB. So quite a lot of different organizations have been involved in CBDC research. And take note, people, because, you know, a full-scale retail version, maybe a long way away, but they're continually doing work behind the scenes. And you don't want to be there when there's a programmable money that's launched. Don't be left behind, because privacy, I've been talking about this for a long time. It's something that's very important, and it's lost in the CBDC world. Bitcoin solves a problem, but remember, there's KYC Bitcoin that could be problematic. So it's kind of a muddied water. But moving on, I want to talk about good news for the people in Kiev, because Canada is going to be sending over to them $115 million to help repair their power grid. And hopefully this is going to keep the lights on over there in the war-torn city and maybe provide some much-needed heat for the people in a land far, far away. And remember, this is $115 million. It could have been potentially spent elsewhere, say the medical system over here in Canada. For example, we had a report of some 88-year-old patient in New Brunswick. She was moved out of her room because that room was needed for somebody because they had access to oxygen supply. Okay, that's fine. Move her out. Where did they place this 88-year-old woman? Well, they placed her in the next best place, supply room. And we hear stories like this all the fucking time. And here's another one.
Wait a minute. Supply room?
And a supply room, Joey. You heard that correct. We hear about this, people, hallway medicine, and now supply room medicine. Imagine working your whole life, you're putting your hard-earned money into a system through taxation, and when it comes time for you to draw upon it, you're left lying in a bed next to linens. And
is there a name for that? Is there a name for that when you put a bunch of stuff into something and then when you go to withdraw it, it's not there? I think there's a name for that, isn't there? What is it?
I don't know.
Is it fucking Ponzi. It's a fucking Ponzi is what it is.
Well, so she was, think about that. You're in a supply room and
look at this. Hey, I don't want to cut you off. This comment from Romel in the chat. She was also blind. She didn't know she was in a supply room.
I did not know that.
These people should be hung up in the town square if that's the case.
I know that she was forced to wear sunglasses.
No mercy. Unbelievable, man.
I know she was forced to wear sunglasses, and it was being reported. The reason why is because the lights in the supply room are very bright and they can't dim it. Obviously, supply room has to be lit bright in order to get the supplies. And it's sad. So, and on top of that, they had to hang a fucking cloth to give her some semi-privacy in there. But I'm telling you, this isn't a one-off. And stories like this, they're becoming common. I talked about hallway medicine. We hear this all the time over there. And we still haven't officially, as of recording this episode, hit winter. It's just a couple of days away. And winter is a time when the flu and other cold-related illnesses, they tend to peak in that time. What's the fix to all this? I don't know. But I could say this, what's being done up until now is not the answer. That truly is a given. And another issue that's being brought to light in Canada is shoplifting. And that's also on the rise in Canada. And Industry Insider was saying that with inflation and labor shortages cited as major factors for this increase. Well, no fucking shit. So they're saying break-ins, armed robberies, physical and especially violent incidences are much higher than in previous years. In fact, if you look at violence, random acts of violence in Vancouver, for instance, it spiked. What happened? That's a very well-to-do city, beautiful city, but people are just going nuts. Must be something in the water, or maybe it's the money over there. I don't know. But this isn't just for goods like people are stealing, petty theft, shit, Best Buy. They're going to grocery stores and they're noticing fucking an uptick in fucking theft of food in grocery stores. That's a telling sign. That means you don't even have the money to fucking feed yourself. They're saying that it's estimated retail crime cost $5 billion in Canada in 2019. That number has gone up. I would imagine it's $10, $15 billion, not just because of inflation, because money is worth way less now than it was before, but also there's more and more theft. So you got more and more retail stores. Even the smaller ones, they're hiring fucking security guards just to keep people at bay. They're also hiring off-duty police officers. This is third world level fucking bullshit. And you know what? This is stuff. It's going to get worse. You think it's going to get any better? No fucking way, because we haven't hit the bottom. The bottom is still a long way from now. Be prepared. We got CBDCs on the fucking horizon. We have people getting fucking served medicine or medical care in fucking supply closets. And we have fucking people stealing food. This is the world we live in. It's third world, and there's no other way to say it.
I would love to have Tiff Macklem on the show and ask him what problems he thinks CBDCs will solve if the current monetary regime remains in place. What issues does a CBDC system fix if you continue to just debase value at every opportunity in perpetuity forever? Well, it doesn't solve any problems. It has to be repressive in nature to even paper over some of the problems. It has to be repressive in nature. I can't believe that people who are in the know about CBDCs support this at all. There are people I know who are like, yeah, I wouldn't mind having like a digital wallet where the government could just send me my tax return, send me my whatever. I don't know. What's another good example? My baby bonus, send me my, you know, there's all sorts of different government payments, transfer payments that take place. We've talked about how much the GDP those payments make up. Actually, it's quite significant. But the thing is that if you can grab, you know, like this is why the GDP as a, like the transfer payments as a percentage of GDP is such a big problem. I'm kind of formulating this as I'm thinking here, so just bear with me. Mm-hmm. If the transfer payments make up 40% of the GDP, let's say, which I think it is in the States. I saw Fartface2K, great Twitter handle, but he tweeted today that in the States, it's about 37% of GDP is government payments. So if over here, let's say it's 40%, okay, it's probably even higher than that. Actually, I think we calculated it to be quite a bit higher. But let's say it's 40 or 50%. If you can capture 40% of economic activity by making sure that 40%, quote unquote, needs the money, welfare payments, baby bonuses, all sorts of different things to help you get by, right, to make ends meet. If you capture that via a CBDC wallet, it's going to be very difficult for vendors to say they're not going to use a CBDC wallet. They're going to actually start encouraging vendors to use it and say, look, you got 40% of your GDP coming through these channels now. You need this thing. And not only that, but you have to pay your taxes through CBDCs too. It's another common thing I hear. If you do those two things, it's over. You're going to get everybody, because the only people who are going to oppose this are people who have been villainized by the press without relent for the last 10 years. The rich, right? Quote unquote rich, wealthy people who are quote unquote trying to evade taxes by not using the CBDC, Bitcoiners who told you to opt out against inflation but are down 60% for a year at a time, all these different groups. And so you start to kind of see the landscape taking shape here. What was the nature and the reason for all these different attacks over the last few years? What was the reason and the nature for all these different sort of formulaic narrative building exercises over the last few years? Well, this is it. I think you're going to see it come to fruition here. And it's going to be one of those times where naysayers who are going to say, oh my God, you were right, but now it's too late. I can't imagine this going any other way. For Visa and MasterCard to be openly saying to potential shows they want to sponsor that there's going to be CBDCs in their platform, I think that's like a really important flag. It's a signpost right there. Like, that's not even, they're not trying to hide it at all. They must know McCormick is going to share that out or talk to his friends about it or mention it on the show, heaven forbid. But they don't care. There doesn't seem to be a lot of caring these days about the intention of policymakers. So to your point about, what is the world look like with CBDCs? Well, you think about the most repressive thing possible. You think about the, I don't know, quote unquote, risky behavior you participate in. For example, okay, is there going to be a time where toxic masculinity becomes a public health crisis and they start taxing you for your time that you spend at the gym? They start taxing you for your protein intake, specifically your meat intake, your red meat intake, or your chicken, your pork, whatever. All that stuff would have seemed outlandish, man, to say the least, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. But now, if you had to bet, I always say, like, if there's a bullet in the chamber and you got to bet one way or the other, the next 5 years, do you see a tax on meat via CBDC wallet? I would bet that probably the answer is yes. And so if that's the world you want to live in, fine. I would suggest to people that the least you could do, okay, the least you could do, again, to go back to the shots on goal analogy, you got to get shots on the net here. And Bitcoin is a shot on the net at the very least. Okay. If you don't believe in any of the other stuff, Bitcoin is a shot on the net to get out of this, or at least have a way to act outside of this system. Right. While countries and perhaps states and next door adopt ways of thinking that more closely align with what you think the world should look like, a world where you get to make a free choice about what protein you consume, what gun you purchase or don't purchase, what home you own or don't own, how many children you have or don't have, what education those children can receive or not receive. All these different things are important. What kind of healthcare you want or should be entitled to, and what you're willing to pay for as part of a tax base. Like you mentioned there, Len, the common term for what you're describing in healthcare is Ponzi. You deposit, you keep on being fed these stories. I mentioned on Twitter a little while ago, the greatest lie Canadians are fed is that we have some kind of moral high ground because of our quote unquote free healthcare. It is neither free nor care. And a lot of people are finding that out the hard way now when they go with their kid to the hospital and find out it's a 16-hour wait and they don't have any medication, and good luck. We're going to stick a blind lady in a supply closet and hope no one finds out about it. Well, here we are. Okay. Do you think this happens in other countries? I don't know, maybe, but it shouldn't happen here. This is not a country where that's supposed to happen. And yet here we are talking about it. I think this is probably the third or fourth week out of the last five that we've talked about a failure, a very public failure in healthcare. At least they didn't ask the lady to go to the death torture chamber or whatever before they offered her the supply closet. Like, what's the pipeline? You triage in, you got a broken ankle. Okay, well, we don't have any beds, so we're going to put you in the hospital. See, and then they wait you out. You wait 24 hours. Okay, well, nothing here. We're going to put you in the supply closet for a bit. Then they wait you out. Still no rooms. What do you think? Death? Or are you going to go home or go to Shoppers Drug Mart and try and get aspirin, which, by the way, has been off the shelf for 2 months? It's honestly, it's unbelievable. But I'm not actually, you know what? I'm not even going to say it because
better sometimes than not say it.
But I am.
Yeah. You got to put your tongue at times.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Given the environment it is.
If you guys see my my mouth bleeding here, you'll know what happened.
I just want to double back. You were talking about CBDCs. I don't want to just gloss over the health discussion we're having. The CBDCs, they will solve a problem. It's going to be tax collection. And right now, there's an economy out there that is using cash, and it's potentially it's tax avoidance, and CBDCs would solve that particular problem. And another thing, it would help streamline payments. And you touched upon that when it comes time to having money given out, it could streamline it. But a retail CBDC, I think we're still far away from seeing that take place. Is you can't fuck this up. It's got to be, when it's done, it has to be done right. It's not something that's a test bed or it's in beta form. You can't fuck up people's money. Because if you do, then they can't afford to eat, pay their mortgage, and anything else. So I could see a pilot project maybe running, and you sign on, and there would be some disclaimer saying if there's any problems, it's just unfortunately, it's you know, you have to take on the risk along with it. But I still think we're a long way from seeing a retail CBDC come into play. I could be wrong, though. We'll see what happens.
I think that there's market incentives there. Whatever. We don't have to get too into the weeds on this because I'm pretty tired, but there's market incentives there. And the guy who McCormick had on what Bitcoin did today, like I got to listen to that show again because my wheels were really spinning listening to that guy speak. I don't know what the number is percentage wise that like a competent government could presumably collect in taxes without causing civil unrest, but that number's got to be lower than. Or it's got to be higher, excuse me. The civil unrest threshold has to be higher than the number that would force productive people, the majority of the tax base out of the jurisdiction into a jurisdiction that was more tax friendly, especially in the sovereign individual paradigm, which is a word I hate to use, but we have to use it here. In the sovereign individual paradigm, people just don't need to stay in any one place or work in any one place. They'll just go wherever they want because the service travels. For example, okay, you and me, if we want to do this podcast from, you know, Antigua or something, we could do it, right? Get paid in Bitcoin and not worry about jurisdictional anything. We would just be arbitraging whichever government was most friendly to us. You know, you have the most beautiful women, we'll see you there. You got the nicest swimming pools, we'll see you there. You got the best Jamaican patties, we'll see you there. You got the best tax laws, most friendly tax laws, we'll see you there. Eventually, this is going to become the norm. And the third world nations, they're going to start noticing this. They're going to start seeing, hey, wait a minute. The people from the first world economies are smarter, more willing to start families, more willing to do things that are, you know, not only outside of government reach, but like obviously anti-government reach. Why don't we let them do it over here? Let's let them do it in our borders. How can we pay them? What is there a sovereign currency? Can we use Bitcoin? Can we pay them in Bitcoin? That's how this starts and continues, right? That's why when people say first world government's going to ban Bitcoin, they might, but don't like you can't think of it as them banning Bitcoin. What you have to think of it, the lens you have to look at it through is they're banning people from they're trying to ban currency that would allow them to bring in the best people. And in turn, they're forcing those people to work other places for other means. This is the way they have to start framing these things. It's not about Bitcoin. Okay, Bitcoin is just a brand. It's the sovereign currency, the custodial asset that is outside of these rails, outside of these policies, and ultimately allows people to use jurisdictional arbitrage to their advantage. This is what you're driving out if you ban Bitcoin. Bitcoin is just the name for these things. It's the name for this phenomenon. But the phenomenon is much more wide-ranging than this. It will not stop. This phenomenon will not stop. People will take money in any form, the best form, in fact. And right now, this is Bitcoin. That's how these governments have to start thinking about this. But it doesn't seem to me that they want to. Certainly, they understand this. They're seeing it. I'm 100% sure they're seeing it. Canada, for example, okay? Bringing in 500,000 immigrants every year, what does that tell you? It tells you that the best people, the tax base, is leaving or choosing not to reproduce. That's what that tells you. So they see this, right? This is obvious to anyone paying attention to demographics that these problems are occurring in countries where the tax laws are becoming more and more oppressive. This isn't going to last forever. They have to, at some point, change the reality inside their borders. So to my point earlier, it's not about abolishing government. It's about having them either reimagine this on their own for their own longevity or dying a slow death. This is the only two options at this point with this stuff, with the cat out of the bag, right? With Bitcoin, the sovereign currency for the sovereign person. Yeah, I don't know. You can tell I brought Sovereign Individual with me on vacation. So I've been thinking about this a lot, but this is like only going to continue to spiral. I've read that book so many fucking times, but it never gets old because you pick something up that these guys are talking about and there's a new current story, a new current issue, a new current thing that will spark something in your mind. And you'll go back to that book and say like, this is what I'm seeing here. How do I make the best of this? And it's just, it's constant. It's over and over again. But for some reason, I mean, we know the reason because tax regimes are the only thing these guys care about, presumably, at least that's the way it seems. They're gonna try and be as oppressive, as controlling as possible on the way to their eventual either reimagining or their eventual demise.
They have been up until now. It's not like they're going to be changing. Look, to adopt Bitcoin, to use it in any way, shape, or form on a national level, you're giving up your monetary policy, the ability to manipulate the currency which you create. And that is a very powerful tool. I can't see them willingly wanting to give up. I can understand a third world nation wanting to give up because their currency and their central bank has very little power and very little value. But a first world country like Canada, UK, United States, it's going to be harder to adopt Bitcoin and still keep your monetary policy within your own borders because you're giving up a heck of a lot. And it's going to be a very, very difficult sell to have people, not just politicians, but then even the people in which they serve, the general population, adopt that type of mentality as well. It's going to be a tough sell, and it's too bad. And to go back, you were saying you could do arbitrage in terms of finding the best place that's for you to work. Whatever services whatever services you provide, there's still going to have to be services provided within country Canada. There's always going to have to be people paving roads, building, and you know.
Okay. Up to that point, okay. This guy's when I really started listening to what Bitcoin did today, I always have podcasts on in the background. We do this show. You have to be listening to stuff all week, otherwise you'll say something and I won't know what the fuck you're talking about, or vice versa. The thing this guy said to me today, or said today, that made me rewind and start listening to the show again. There is a line, a distinction between paying the government to do something and having the government actually do it. Why do they have to do it? You can pay them to administer the program, but they should not be administering it. They've proven that they can't administer these programs with any success. No matter how much money they get, they still fuck it up. So
there's always going to be
paying them to do it is fine. I'm okay with that. I think there's like some rationale, the details of which I can't quite, you know, articulate right at this second. But why do they have to administer the programming? Why not give it to someone who can administer it with more efficiency, more effectiveness? The same way, by the way, government does this. Yeah, they do this in many cases, right? There's lots of contracts out there.
Right. I mean, that's so it's not like it has to be centrally administered. No, it could be somebody that they find that could do it for cheaper, better, whatever, better value, anything. You have to pick the rationale. So it doesn't have to be done by them. It's just, unfortunately, they're the ones that are going to have to take in the money and then kind of distribute it. But then it comes to a point, is there going to be any favoritism when Jesus hand these things out? Is it going to be a buddy-buddy? We don't know. Then it becomes problematic.
We do know, unfortunately. Stories every week.
Then it becomes problematic. But the one thing, and I may take some flack here, is that you still need some, and I can't believe I'm saying it, you still need somebody administering a population. Is if you have nobody there, if you have a void, history has shown you just have a bunch of warlords come in and just take over. Eventually, somebody becomes more powerful and takes over and it controls the people. It might as well hopefully be a government you trust, a government you can vote in that can work on your best behalf. Because if you don't have that, it's just anarchy. And, you know, we'll look at Somalia is going to be the example. You had warlords there that just fill the void. And that's the way things are. There's always going to be somebody with a bigger stick that comes around and just becomes the most powerful person. And there's nothing you can do because they have the biggest fucking stick. And another thing to consider, too, and you always hear Bitcoiners saying that, yeah, I'm going to be sovereign and blah, blah, blah. But fuck, think about this. Even if you find an island that's, you know, you want to take that, you know, and you want to be sovereign over there, who's to say somebody's going to come in and just annex that. You still need somebody to protect you, and you can only pay so much for protection. Eventually, somebody's going to have more money to fucking pay for more people, more ammunition to fucking take it over. They like it. If there's resources somewhere, they will take it. This is the problem I have with a lot of things when it comes to, you know, I'm going to be my own person and everything. It's no, you still have to live within the community. This is the reality of it.
And community is not the same as a, you know, global, you know, panopticon state trying to administer every program and be a part of every part of your life.
Correct. But typically people live in environments that are populated, like Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, you name it. Like this very, and when you have that, you have to have some level of services provided by, maybe not, so sorry, some level of services
available.
Not available, yes, but the idea of what is available has to be provided by a centralized body. The centralized body may not have be providing the service, but they may at least have to draw out the plans and say it's got to be done like this. They could outsource some of the work. Like you have to have public transportation, for instance. It may not have to be done state level transportation. It could be done privately, but you still need that. It's something you need in a populated area. So you just can't get away from all this. This is the reality of it. We live in a world, we live in communities, and money has to go somewhere and then hopefully comes back to us in some level of services. It's just not lost and just transmission. Just unfortunately, it's the way it happens. It's the reality. It's a fiat world we live in. And when you move towards some hard asset, it then becomes more difficult to administer a budget. It's when you have a scarce amount of resources and you know that you can't just arbitrarily start borrowing or printing to make ends meet. And you have to live within your means. Fuck, we know it as individuals. Governments don't have that same mentality. But once that's shared with them, once they're forced to adopt that, it's a game changer. And then you're forced to basically live within your means. And those who have the resources that they could exploit, maybe the wrong word to use, but they could parlay into more, you know, something better like oil, natural gas, fresh water, uranium, you name it. You have an advantage that somebody else doesn't have. And here in Canada, we are blessed with that. We just have to somehow embrace that and shine a light on that and use that to our advantage, not to our disadvantage. And to date, it doesn't seem like we're using it to that. It's more of a shame on us type of approach. We have the oil. Let's leave it in the ground.
We'll
get it from somebody. Yeah. It's too bad.
Yeah.
But Joey, a few other topics.
That was great discussion there. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so we could transition to the Bitcoiner of No Coiner of the Week. I only have one, and it's a no coiner, and I can be brief on that. It's up to you what you want.
I have nothing. I'll tell you why in the after show. I'm exhausted. Long weekend for me. But yeah, go ahead, man. People are ready. I'm ready for sure.
Oh no, it's very brief because I talked about him already earlier in the show, and it's Donald J. Trump. He's my no coiner of the week, and why is because of this whole NFT bullshit that he did. It's absolutely disgraceful that he would go down this path, and it's simply just a money grab. And I'm fine with a money grab, but money grab with NFTs, that's something that leaves a sour taste in my mouth. And anybody that's peddling this bullshit, you are just you're trying to take money up from people and give them nothing back. That's absolute bullshit. And you know what? Unfortunately, he's my no corner of the week.
It's too bad. I really enjoyed the time I spent on the Donald subreddit back in 2016. Just nothing but quality memes all day, every day. I was showing you guys at work. It was, you know, those were the days, man. That was peak election stuff. But I don't know. I know there's a couple of guys we talked to that still want Trump to run and be successful in 2024, but I just don't see it now. I think it's DeSantis's race. Got to get out, man. If you're selling, you know, and NFTs with the Adobe watermark still on the back in the picture, might be time to pack it in.
To be honest though, he's the only one that has announced. He threw his name in.
Nobody else
has, so he is running, and maybe it's too soon because others could look at him and see what he's doing and use that as a way to ping him off from afar, but he's the only one that's running. And who knows, he may still end up being, you know, not just running but potentially be president. A theory is that DeSantis would be the VP. I don't know if the two could operate in the same environment like that, but the rationale would be DeSantis, by doing so, would have the knowledge that Trump would be only a one-termer because he can't run for a third term. And so there is a potential for him to be the heir apparent of a president after Trump retires after one term. Also, he would Trump would do his stuff with the economy, and they would leave DeSantis to deal with what's at the border. And that would be the domestic issue that he could hang his hat on. And he has the ability to deal with the mess over there. I don't know. That's the theory. I don't know if it's ever going to work out, because you have two dynamics over there, two very, you know, they're both alpha males, and it's hard to have them both agree to that. We'll see, but it's only time will tell if that's going to happen.
We're going to find out, man. I'm ready for that cycle. That's going to make for some good CBP content. Clown World South, the American election.
I don't know if it's Clown World. It's just more
buddy, the primaries are always Clown World.
No, they're jokes. There's a difference between Clown World and something it's going to be comedic. It's like you're tuning in to watch Seinfeld for 30 minutes. You know it's going to be funny. It's not Clown World. This is the same thing. You're going to watch 2 hours of primaries of people throwing mud at each other, people showing their hands on how big and small or small they may be. It's great stuff. I love that.
That's great. That's great. Yep. Well, good show, buddy. Glad to be back. Thanks. Thanks for holding down the fort while I was gone. The price of Bitcoin in American dollars, $16,493, barely any move at all since the beginning of the show.
Oh, man. Let me just get the Canadian side of things. It's $22,491. So, yeah, whatever. Not bad. Keep buying. So, it's good time to stack, not financial advice.
Yeah, I mean, keep your DCA on. Me and Len have Dave Bradley, who I think is the COO of Bitcoin Well. Yeah, coming on Wednesday. He actually sent me a message on Telegram before the show and asked if we're still good for Wednesday. I said, yes, sir. Yes, sir. So if you don't know about Dave Bradley, you can look up Bitcoin Well. We've talked to Adam a bunch, obviously. But Dave Bradley has a great, great Twitter thread that I'm like 85% sure he wrote after a couple of glasses of dark liquor about how to cook a steak properly. And it is good shit. Not only is the thread funny, but also I cooked a steak that way before, and it's the only way I cook a steak now. So
shirtless,
make of that what you will. I keep my shirt on, but the rest of the stuff is, the rest of the stuff holds true. So anyway, after show coming up next, if you're on audio, zip over to YouTube and listen to me talk about my experience at what might have been the best football game played this year in Buffalo on Saturday night. And in the meantime, take care of yourselves.
Yeah, take care.
Buddy, I am exhausted, okay? Let me tell you how my weekend went. On Friday, I thought I was getting sick. Thursday, Friday, I thought I was getting sick. And I actually still kind of feel a little bit congested, but I don't know if that's just because I'm tired or because I actually am getting some kind of virus. So Saturday morning, go to the gym, come home. About 11:30, my buddies come to pick me up. They're coming from Toronto. And we head down to Buffalo. We get beer and wings at the Anchor Bar in Buffalo. Staple. If you haven't been to a Bills game, got to go to the Anchor Bar before a Bills game. It's about 15 minutes from the stadium. Total dive. Impossible to get a seat.
They still play Rich or Ralph Wilson, whatever the fuck it's called.
They play Ralph Wilson. It's called Highmark now. It's a medical insurance or some kind of hospital or something.
It's still Rich Stadium to me.
Yeah, yeah. So that's throwback there. So that Bills-Dolphins game, you don't watch NFL. Did you hear about that game at all?
I heard about snowballs or something. That's all I heard.
That game, Len, on TV, I had buddies messaging me during the game saying that they keep on taking what the announcers, what the play-by-play guys are calling game breaks, okay? And the game breaks, after every whistle, was the referee addressing the crowd, telling them to stop throwing snowballs at the players on the Miami sideline, or you'll be assessed a 15-yard penalty. Bills will be assessed a 15-yard penalty. I have never in my life seen a crowd like that. That stadium, Len, is the epitome of home field advantage. All game long, there was snowballs flying at the Miami sideline, flying at the Miami players when they're on the field running out of bounds or when they're close to sideline, flying at Miami fans, flying at anyone with a Dolphins hat on, scarf on, anything. Worse, even worse, okay? You would think that in Buffalo, where they just had like 2 feet of snow over the 48 hours previous, they would clear the snow from the stadium. They don't. The snow is on the seats. It's on the ground. It's everywhere. They want you to throw snow during those games. Even more, it was a Saturday night, so no one had to work the next day. The number of King cans I saw people consuming, I have never seen any like drinking like this in my life, even in university. Some of the people in my area, we're sitting in the 100s, lower bowl. We're like 20th row, okay? These people were obliterated by the time kickoff came, and they drank all game long, hurling snowballs, profanities, insults at the players, the referees. Unbelievable. Then in the fourth quarter, it starts to snow. Okay. Not just like snow a little bit. It was a blizzard in the fourth quarter. Alden's got an appearance there. It was,
yeah,
it was
a, the daughter's here.
Oh.
Okay. I'll see you in a bit.
In the fourth quarter, it's a blizzard. And, that stadium, Len, like with everyone drunk there and during the intermission, singing Let It Snow, singing White Christmas, like it was unbelievable. I would like to see any NFL team win in that environment. It is damn, it's got to be damn near impossible. In the snow with the crowd, the drinking, the noise, the wind, it's got to be impossible. The Miami coach was running up and down the sideline the entire second half, trying to get the referees to throw a flag because his guys were getting hit with snowballs. He was getting hit with snowballs. And he couldn't get them to do it. And I was like, me and my buddies were dumbfounded at how raucous that place was. I told my wife, okay, so after the game, they got about four or five parking lots there within about 100 meters of the stadium, 200 meters of the stadium. And it's got to be 10,000 cars probably. That stadium holds, I think, 60,000, 65,000. They got one exit, one street to get all those cars out. I didn't get home from Buffalo. The game started at 8:15, finished just shy of midnight. I didn't get home to my house until about 4:15.
Cool.
Yeah. So couldn't get out of the stadium. Once you got out of the stadium, the roads are all closed, police directing traffic, gong show, total gong show. And long ass night, man. Long ass night. Yesterday, I tried to wake up on time yesterday. I tried to wake up at like 9 or 10. I just couldn't do it. And now today I am fucking wiped. Absolutely wiped.
Sounds like it was worth it though.
So worth it. I told my wife, we got to go next year. You got to come, because she went to her first game this year. She's a football fan too. Say so next year we got to go, especially if it's a Saturday night. When people don't have to work on Monday, Len, they are so nuts with the drinking, the, you know, God only knows what other PEDs those guys are on, but unbelievable. Highly recommend that for anyone who hasn't gone to a Bills game in the snow like that, especially against the division opponent late in the season. Fuck, was it ever good? Unreal.
They still play in Kansas. They still play at Arrowhead?
Yeah.
I haven't watched football in like 15 years. But back in the day, Arrowhead was known to be the loudest stadium in the league.
Yeah.
And they always said that that was one of the hardest ones to play as an opponent because you couldn't hear the snap count. And it was just so loud over there. And it's not like it's good weather. I mean, in the wintertime, it's fucking cold and windy because it's outdoors too. Like, just like Rich.
It's cold.
Wilson, whatever the fuck it's called. Yeah. So like, that's another one. And another one is Mile High. I'm not sure if they still play there.
In Denver, yeah.
Yeah, that's another one, because not just because of the cold weather, but then you're dealing with less air because it's, you know, you're mile high up, right? So yeah, that's another one I recall is just being a tough place to play as an opponent. So yeah,
just Len, the snow in Buffalo, like, you know this, we live, you
the
know,
lake ahead, lake it, effect it, could be
yeah
brutal.
it's famous in the Golden Horseshoe that, you know, we cross the border back into Hamilton or back into Niagara, you know,
we got fuck all here.
Nothing, no snow. There's fucking feet. There's feet of it in Buffalo. Feet and feet and feet of
it. But even Hamilton sometimes gets nailed because of the proximity of where you are.
Once in a blue moon. Once in a blue moon.
And here we get nothing. So it's, and we're like 30 kilometer difference.
Yeah.
But it could be the, you know, winter wonderland versus just, you know, a regular cold day with not much snow on the ground.
Absolutely insane.
Yeah, there you go. It's good. Good for you. Enjoyed that. It was so very eventful couple of weeks or week and a half for you, from coming back from Jamaica and then going into to watch a Bills game in a fucking snowfield. That's nuts. And you know what? You were saying that they don't get rid of the snow. Where could they get rid of the snow? If that stadium.
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know.
And it's not just the lower bowl. You got to get all the snow everywhere. And you can't just compact it. You got to come with wheelbarrows or something. And fucking, that's a lot of work. Just let it melt.
It was unbelievable. I have, like I said, man, I like, words don't do it justice. I tried to take a few videos, and so did my buddies too. They were sharing them today and yesterday of like the touchdown celebrations, the crowd noise, when the Bills score, like the snow flying around the stadium, and like, it's a whiteout. You can't see shit between the snow coming down and the snow going around the stadium. It was nuts. And I highly recommend it to people. Ramel's in the chat. Len held interviews while you're on vacation. Good candidates. Who are you thinking of bringing in? Who's on the short co-host list?
I can't even come up with a witty answer. That I have no fucking clue. Nobody. Who's gonna replace you?
We should talk about is what we're gonna do the week between Christmas and New Year. So no Christmas show this year, and we're gonna do a fromage style show in between Christmas and New Year's, the best of 22. So I think we got a couple of categories, right? We got best Bitcoiner, best no coiner. You wrote me a bunch of other ones. I want to add to that list: best podcast episode, worst podcast episode, and also what did you have? The star most likely to continue rising was on there too.
I think that was one. Yeah.
Yeah. there'll be a bunch of categories, and we'll give out some end of the year awards. It'd be pretty good.
Yeah. So check it out. So obviously it's coming out next week. It's going to be like a year end type thing, and yeah, it'll be fun and hopefully you enjoy it. And
yeah. Save us from having to like choke down news during the holidays, because God knows we're both going to be busy. When do you start your holiday stuff? My wife's work dinner is tomorrow, and then I basically don't stop until Monday. Like even the night we have Dave Bradley, I like after Dave, I got to run to the mall and get gifts, because I'm not going to have time Thursday or Friday. Like I have to go get gifts. I have like two people to buy for that I haven't bought for yet, and I'm not gonna have time.
Oh no, I'm good. Just for me, the 24th. That's when the festivities start. So Saturday, is that the 24th?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm good until then. No man, it's all good, man. It's I've been prepped. I've been ready to go. Lucky and guy. Really, my wife does most of the same.
I only had two people I had to buy for: my dad and my brother. My wife did my wife did everything else. So
I didn't do. Without her, I'd be fucking up the creek. I don't know what I'd do. Like my head would just come rolling off my shoulders, because if without her, I wouldn't have a clue how to do things. So chill. Yeah. There you go. So I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't know what else to say.
That's it.
Sorry for the rant earlier. Fuck these people. Fucking make me angry with a fucking.
Yeah, you know, bullshit. Len, some weeks are harder than others to keep it contained, buddy, for sure. This is a tough week for it. Yeah,
man. All right. All right,
boys and girls. We'll see you on Wednesday with Dave from Bitcoin Well. Take care of yourselves.
Yeah, take care.
Way to go. Good job.